Hello again and welcome to our podcast, Everyone Has a Story, a podcast that complements the two free quarterly lifestyle magazines in Noosa Magazine and the newly launched Hello Sunshine magazine that covers the Sunshine Coast from Perigian down to Caloundra and west to the hinterland, Montville, Mullaney and all that beautiful area there. If you would like your brand, your business to be part of these two exciting publications, simply reach out and contact the client service managers. You can do that on a number of social media platforms. Instagram and Facebook are two, in Noosa Magazine and Hello Sunshine, with a cumulative reach of 35,000 copies printed every quarter. Now, one local businessman that has certainly taken advantage of having his brands and his businesses featured in our Hello Sunshine publication is a local bloke by the name of Tony Kelly, who's been in the hospitality and restauranting game for a long time. I loved recording this podcast with Tony because he is a savvy local businessman. And what you'll get out of this podcast, if you're thinking of starting your own business, you don't even have to be in the restaurant or hospitality sector. This is the kind of guy, the kind of entrepreneurial mind. He's the bloke that zags when others zig. He's the guy that can clearly identify with laser focus, his words, a point of difference between his brand and an opposition brand. I hope you enjoy listening to this podcast as much as I enjoyed recording it. Here's Everyone Has a Story, and today it's Tony Kelly. Well, actually, let's start with this. I always like throwing something a bit different to start with. Complete this sentence, Tony. I'm happiest when?
I'm happiest when I'm sitting on my back deck of my house with my wife, having a glass of wine, watching my kids play in their backyard.
You're well known in Southeast Queensland and all over Australia for your culinary skills. But I want to go right back to the beginning for people that don't know your story and don't know your journey.
I'm a Sunshine Coast boy, born and bred. So my mum and dad had a substantial crane hire business on the Sunshine Coast for years called Kelly Green Crane Hire. So that was birthed in our backyard in Memorial Avenue in Maroochydore. So I grew up on the coast, did my apprenticeship at the Hyatt Coolum back when it was a fully functional five-star hotel, which was pretty epic. Back then there was well over 100 chefs. We used to do everything from in-flight catering to massive banqueting numbers. And, you know, they had a proper European-style fine dining restaurant. So I spent the first five and a bit years of my culinary journey, you know, there going through the paces with a real, you know, old school exec chef. He's a right prick, he was, but he was a very good trainer. You know, I suppose it was the old way of doing things. You know, and probably now, if he was to be in front of me now, I would have no choice but to thank him for the training he gave, that's for sure.
When you were a kid, were you always hanging around the kitchen? I mean, who did most of the cooking? Your mum, your dad? Who was it?
No, I don't think unfortunately, my father passed away in his mid-60s, but in all the time that I was a kid living at home, I don't think I ever seen him cook. There was the occasional flipping of a sausage on a barbecue, but that was about the beginning and the end of my father's prowess in the kitchen. But my mum was she was an avid cook, and so was my grandmother. I can't remember a night growing up where there wasn't a hot meal on the table. So I was always interested in cooking. It feels like an eternity ago. I wanted to be a golf pro when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But my father was always certain, you know, you've got to get a trade behind you. And he thought, you know, food and booze was going to be around and forever. And it was a solid trade, and I enjoyed it. But it wasn't until I actually physically started my apprenticeship that I really realised that I would be one of the lucky ones in the world that will get to do what they love to do for the rest of their lives. And going to work every day doesn't even feel like a chore to me. So I'm very fortunate that I found my calling and I love my trade. So once I finished my apprenticeship, I stayed on with the Hyatt for another year. I got promoted quite quickly, which was great. And then I opened actual Billy Moore's first restaurant with Gareth Collins. Gareth was the executive chef at Earth Bistro Wine Bar in Mooloolaba, back on the Esplanade, where, you know, the Venning Street there. I was his sous chef. So I was about 18 months there. That was my first journey outside of hotels. And to be involved in the opening of a small restaurant, which was fantastic. And you know, you really realize the freedom you have outside of a hotel, the corporate structure of a hotel. So I did that, but I certainly had a yearning to travel. So I just randomly applied for a job with Disney that I seen in the paper. And literally 4 weeks later, I was on a plane going to Miami with, I think it was about $150 in my pocket, a bag over my shoulder, and a job that I lied through my teeth to get. And I'm boarding a cruise ship that could hold 3,000 passengers, and I was heading up the brigade in the kitchen to feed two sittings of 800 every day. I was so far out of my depth, it wasn't funny. So I surrounded myself with good people and bluffed my way through it. And fortunately enough, the balls fell in the right direction, and I was successful in that job. I loved working for Disney. I was over there for a while. I think I did two contracts, and then 9/11 happened. So I was actually sailing one of the Disney cruise ships into Norfolk, Virginia, which is the world's largest naval base, on that morning of September 11. So we arrived in the world's largest naval base when the world was about to go to hell. So wow. About 3 hours after we arrived there, we were trying to scramble and look for a way to get home. So the whole world sort of changed from that moment. And 10 days later, I was back in Brisbane. So
this idea of surrender, and I want to talk about your business success as we talk more, Tony, but this idea of surrounding yourself with capable lieutenants, is that a fundamental of building any great successful business?
My golden rule is, John, that if I'm the smartest guy in the room, there's a really, really big problem. So our success has always been and will always be our people. So we grow with our people. If we've got great people and we see opportunity because of the people that are with us, we'll take the opportunity, but we won't grow unless we've got the people. And the key to any success that I've had in the past has certainly been because I've been very fortunate enough to be able to surround myself with some, astonishingly talented people, be it front of house and back of house, starting with my wife at the wine bar. I mean, I still to this day don't know anybody that works a restaurant floor as well as what my wife does. You know, she's got that. She's there's a big difference between, I think, service and hospitality. I think hospitality makes people feel as though you're in their living room in their house and they're very welcome, and hospitality can be taught, and it's usually a bit starchy and a bit clinical, but my wife she's got an ability with a restaurant and working people who come in for dinner or lunch, and she just makes people feel so welcome. And I think it started there at the wine bar, and now I've got Eliza, who's one of my most trusted colleagues and a business partner at Rice Boy and Spiro, and now Giddy Geisha, and Mitch, who's arguably the best chef I've ever worked with in my life. I mean, my forte has always been European cooking, but our biggest success story is obviously Rice Boy, and Mitch uses ingredients so I can't even pronounce, let alone work with. So he's a true marvel in the kitchen. And now Marco Bistro, Harry down there, and Dobbers in the kitchen, they cook pasta and I suppose more European style food that I'm way more comfortable being around, and we draw inspiration from each other. But if you look at Harry's CV, he doesn't need me in his life, that's for sure. He's an amazingly talented dude. So we're lucky to be able to have Luke at the front and Pete Marchant and Harry and Dobbers in the kitchen. I mean, it's like a dream team. Yeah. I'm just lucky to be the puppeteer at the top trying to join the dots.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned, a whole list of successful brands and restaurants that you're at the helm of, Tony. And I guess it comes back to the fact that you've got great people to look after. Because, every time I talk to Deb, my wife, and that's how we first met 20-odd years ago, it seems there's another brand or another business, another restaurant or another cafe or another idea from Tony Kelly. I mean, do you ever, do you lie in bed awake at night? I imagine you have a very active imagination in terms of thinking up business ideas and strategies and this entrepreneurial kind of ability to just kind of roll on and roll on. And they're all immensely successful.
Yeah, look, it's true. I suppose I'm certainly got entrepreneurial blood running through my system. I think my dad started that, but I don't know. I certainly do that. I've got a pen and paper next to my bed, and I sleep really well for the sort of first 5 hours of the night, and then I'm usually tossing and turning, and there's ideas that float around, and I'm always researching. I live and breathe the hospitality trade, so I try and stay just a bit ahead of the bell curve. I try and, you know, research what the market's doing, whether it be in Europe or in the US, Sydney or Melbourne. I want to try and stay just a little bit ahead of the game in the Australian market. And that's really hard to do when things like COVID happens and just everything stops, you know, there's no book on that. So that was hard, but I guess opportunity, opportunity is one of the things that I'm always looking for, whether it be a cafe or a restaurant when we've got great people who I know are looking to that next step, if I can help that. I only had a conversation with Deb and Matt Galinsky a couple of months ago. I'd love my legacy to be, people that have started in the kitchen or out the front and grown into their dream role and then gone on to open a dream restaurant. And if I've had a small part in that, that to me is success. I'm not driven or motivated by money. I just love giving opportunity to people and training and then seeing people walk out of a restaurant going, that was a truly great meal.
Well, I was going to ask you what motivates you, because there's been so many diverse, even the donuts, remember the donut place?
That's where the grey hair started, John, the donuts.
Not a good idea. Donuts weren't.
No, I mean, it was fun. I mean, it was great. Yeah, fantastic. Scott and I, you know, we reacted really quick to an idea we seen in the US, and it started on the back of trying to fry a donut out of a burger kitchen. The chefs in the burger kitchen didn't start until 10, so we thought we had a window to fry some donuts in the morning time, and we opened a pop-up venue in the Big Top with a trestle table, and I think in the first day we sold about 800 donuts in about 12 minutes, and we went, holy shit, what just happened there? So then the next day we made 1500, and 6 months later we had a franchise business with nine different stores opened up all around Queensland, and we're frying 30,000 donuts a week. And it was certainly a whirlwind. It was crazy.
You mentioned September 11, you were on a cruise ship for Disney, so 2001. Our paths probably crossed a year or two after that when you were at the Wine Bar. So was the Wine Bar your first fully fledged, was your baby? From a business perspective, what kind of challenge, everybody dreams of having a cafe, a restaurant, of setting up something like that. People, it's not easy, but can you talk us through some of the challenges of setting up that very first restaurant, fully fledged restaurant there on Dewport Ocean Street?
Yeah, it was Dewport Avenue. I suppose the challenges for me was I came from a place where I was, rather than working on the business, I was working in the business every single day. I was in the kitchen and my key hit the lock to open the door, and it closed the door behind me on the way out. All I was focused on was creating great food, great wine, and a great experience. So the commerce of restaurants didn't really come into play. And I just wanted to create something that was very, very special. And the financial achievements, being good at the start and bad at the end, that didn't play a part in what, I didn't really care about that at the time, it was all about the food and the service for me. And I guess the evolution of me as a business person, after the GFC came, we had the Wine Bar for nearly 10 years, and it played such an amazing role in so many people's lives on the Sunshine Coast. I mean, people still come into Market Bistro now and talk about Wine Bar. And when the GFC happened, I realised very quickly how vulnerable fine dining restaurants are, and basically the arse dropped out of our world. 2 months later, I had a baby, and we put the restaurant on the market and we sold it. But there was a lot of reflection after that of, how could I have made that recession-proof, or could I have made that business more financially viable? And if I had to focus more on the maths in and around the restaurant, could it have been a bigger and better success than what it was? So, Now, every decision we make in regards to the restaurant comes from a simple game of mathematics. It's got to come from a place of commerce. And if the numbers stack up, we do it, or we change it, or we tweak it, we adjust it. But I think some people get restaurants in particular that they get confused in around the romance of it. It's really just a simple game of mathematics. You've got to buy a product for X, you've got to sell it for Y, and there's got to be enough in between to cover your costs. So you've really got to reverse engineer that, and every idea really needs to make sure it stacks up with the commerce behind it. So
you mentioned the GFC 07-08, and then you mentioned COVID. How did your businesses survive? Well, let's talk about COVID last year. What plans did you have in place? And where were you in the cycle? Had you started Giddy Geisha at that stage and Market Bistro?
We hadn't signed leases yet. Right. There was heavy conversation around it. And I wouldn't say verbal commitment, but I'd shown great interest in the CBD. I spent half my life on the golf course here in Horton Park, basically where the restaurants are now. So I always wanted to be involved in the CBD. I didn't know where or how much involvement I did want to do. I knew that I was going to have a footprint in there. So as much as I'd spoken about it, there had been no commitment made. But the GFC certainly, it taught me a very valuable lesson, and that is you really need to act really smart. So I remember, I think it was around the 19th of March. I was in Japan in February. And when I was over there, the cruise ship, the P&O cruise ship docked in Yokohama, had 250 odd cases of COVID on board. And my wife was ringing me up going, you know, this is really serious, and I think you need to come home. It didn't really feel very serious over there. And it wasn't until we boarded the plane and was on our way back, I was like, I think this is going to impact us pretty hard. By the time I got home, I think it was about the 19th of March, we were watching obviously everything unfold, and we lost 75% of our trade just in one foul swoop. So that instantly, I brought the biggest whiteboard that could fit in my office, a whole bunch of whiteboard markers and some calculators. I called all of our senior team in, had my accountant on the blower, and we cash flowed ourselves out with five or six different scenarios. And I told our senior team at that stage, it was Nick Blake, Mitch Smith, Eliza, and Ashley. Nick, being the head chef at Rice Boy, and Ashley being the front of house manager, and Mitch and Eliza sort of oversee the operation. They're young people, right? And I said to them that, you know, stage one is we have to lose, you know, six front of house people. We need to lose six people out of the kitchen.
Tony, can I ask you, what do you mean by cash flowed yourself out? Did you have to, are you talking about money in the bank to ride this through?
Yeah, basically, I sort of said to the guys what I believe was going to happen was that we were going to get shut down imminently, and which turned out to be right. I was on the phone to every single local politician that would happily take my call, and there was a few of them, like Ted O'Brien, Fiona Simpson, Andrew Wallace. They were unbelievable. Like, that, I didn't know them very well at all, and they were taking phone calls from me.
What were you looking for from those pollies?
Just any sort of advice on how they think the next 6 months was going to fold out. Yeah. And, you know, it wasn't until you actually got in front of them and you could see what – you could look in their eyes and see that they were ringing an alarm bell. Like, yeah, it was serious. So I basically looked at what was in our bank account, and I said that if this week continues, all the advice that I received was that the restaurant industry was going to get shut down within a week. So, and that was a 50-50 guess. So we said, if the restaurant gets shut down, we've got X amount of money in the bank. This is what our liabilities are. This is how much we owe our staff. Let's start paying them. But basically, we could have lasted till October, and then we were done. So, and that was making sure that all of our staff and all of our suppliers got paid. So, you know, and I said to Ashley and Nick that I would happily go in and put these half a dozen people on stand down myself. And they were like, no, they're our people. We'll do that, which I thought was really crazy, because I look back at me at the wine bar and I think, you know, I was a 29-year-old guy back then, and I thought, could I have done that? And it would have been challenging for me to do that. I don't know whether I could have. I probably would if I had to, but you know, those guys didn't flinch and they said yes. That was on the Monday, and then on the 20th, which was the Friday, we had 117 staff in total pre-COVID. By the Friday, we culled 100 of them, which, you know, was probably the hardest thing we've ever had to do in our lives. And then we had a real touch up over that weekend. So I was in the dishes. Melissa was out on the floor. Eliza was on the floor of the restaurant. Mitch was behind the stove. Even Dirk Long, who owns the Wharf, he was running food and picking up rubbish, and like it was all hands on deck. And I remember the Sunday night, the 22nd of March, is when the PM announced that there'd be no more dining in restaurants and the restaurants were going to go to takeaway only.
Wow.
And I spent the majority of the night on my phone to my accountant getting a strategy in and around takeaway. But like I said to you before, we ran the numbers, did the maths, and they didn't stack up. So we didn't operate takeaway. We closed the business and we went into hibernation. We went in and basically on the 23rd of March was my birthday. So I spent my birthday last year basically packing up a restaurant. We had 25 internationals working for us who had no means of eating or, you know, whatever. So we packed all the food up, which is about 20 grand's worth of food. And packed it all up in bags and stuff. We gave it to whoever needed it. And we closed all the businesses, turned the power up, basically powered the entire operation down apart from our security. And
that would have been a scary time because there was no end goal there. There was no light at the end of the tunnel in terms of a set date when everything would reopen. But I just want to get your reaction to all of that when the PM shut everything down. Because I can distinctly, and I'm not directly involved in the hospitality business. It was March 14 that the news broke here in Australia that France was closing all of its cafes and restaurants. And I remember calling out to my wife, Deb, who I don't know if she kind of digested this info at this stage. And that had it. And like I said, I'm not in the business. I said to her, all of France is closing its cafes and restaurants. I said, this is huge for you.
Italy was a bit before that. Good friends of ours, the Merlots, who their daughter is my assistant, and they've got a bunch of family in Italy and Florence and Venice, and they got just decimated by COVID, and you know that they'd shut a few weeks before, so it was super real because I was living the nightmare with my assistant right next. You know that she had family that was dying over there, so it was super super real to me. So I think that probably aided me believing that it was actually going to happen, because if you think about it, it's a pretty astonishing thing that our business basically shut up.
What was on your mind? What were you thinking next? What's going to happen next?
I'd love to bullshit to you, John, but I tell you, the first 2 weeks, I just mowed my lawn at home a couple of times, three or four times a week, and I started drinking beers a little bit earlier, and it wasn't until my wife said, look, you've mowed that same patch of grass for the fourth time, except now you're drinking a beer at 9:45 in the morning, and I'm concerned. Can you please stop mowing the lawn? And I thought, well, you know, what will be will be. So we started. I called Mitch and Eliza in, and we started planning. You know, what possibly could come of it? Do we want to do takeaway? Do we want to get a line of products that, you know, was what we did in the restaurants packaged up? But I don't know why I thought it, but I really did think that this was going to, there was going to be a relatively short term play. I could see that Australia wasn't nowhere near as bad as what the other countries were. And it's very difficult. Australia is such a small island, so far away from everybody. I kept thinking to myself, I think if we come out of it, we're going to come out okay, and we'll come out the other side. I just didn't want to, with any activity in the restaurants, it would have triggered rent for me. And because we've got such big footprints, the rent is enormous. So our landlords were very gracious in, They came to me before I went to them and stopped our rent. But we couldn't have traded without some rent. So and that that played a big part in our decisions. Now, I thought, speaking to all my suppliers, they just wanted us to come out the other side. Obviously, we use so much product. It doesn't matter whether it's food or booze. We're a big business. So they kept saying to me, just do any, you know, we don't care if you don't pay us. Just make sure that you get out the other side and start trading. So we just tried to think about any improvements we could make in the restaurant. If there's anything that we could do to, you know, any maintenance staff, and, you know, we did a bit to the restaurant. We really focused on how we were going to reopen with a bang. And then our reopening was triggered when the PM allowed us to trade again with 10 people in the restaurant. And I remember that very first day, John, there was two chefs in the kitchen, two people out the front, and myself, and we did 140 covers in the restaurant, and we did 900 takeaway meals on that Friday that we reopened. And I just could not believe it. Like, the amount of people that came down, locals that supported us, and they were so happy to see us back out again. It was truly amazing. Like, we literally had 10 people with a bum on their seat.
Yeah.
In the restaurant from the start to the finish of the day.
Earlier, Tony, you said that when you crunched the numbers at the start of the whole COVID thing, that the takeaway thing wasn't going to work for you.
Yeah.
But having 10 people in the restaurant was a game changer? What happened?
It wasn't really a game changer. It just allowed me to go, well, I think that we'll probably be able to get that additional 100 odd covers through the door.
Yeah.
Did the maths on, you know, what our average check is, and it brought us up to you could never possibly fathom that you would be doing 900 takeaway meals. Yeah, you know, we did the maths on sort of 250, 300 takeaway meals for a whole day. And even that in itself, saying it out loud is outrageously crazy. Like, I would never believe that we could do that, let alone 900. So I thought that if we could get ourselves to a break even with very, very minimal staff on, that was enough for us to at least get the doors reopened, and then hopefully we wouldn't go into lockdown again, because that would have been just catastrophic. And then we'd get ourselves up to a position where hopefully 10 people in the restaurant turned into 20 people in the restaurant, and 20 turned into 40. And then, you know, we slowly but surely reopened.
Yeah.
And fortunately, that's kind of the way it rolled.
Yeah. And then all the oxygen started to flow back through these brands again. And then was it Giddy Geisha?
Giddy Geisha reopened. We were shut for that, reopened 2 weeks after Ice Boy.
Yes. So, you know,
sorry. Spiro opened 2 weeks after, Spiro opened 2 weeks after Rice Boy. And then by that stage, there was some confidence in the market. Once we reopened, I think it was probably, July, August. It's about August because the CBD didn't stop the construction here. It actually helped it, because they really took a free swing at it. When most of the Sunshine Coast was dead, I mean, I remember at the wharf, I went over there. We were closed for 2 weeks, I think, and I went to the wharf on a Saturday at 11 o'clock, and my car was the only car in the car park. Like, it was truly crazy. So the CBD, they just put their foot down, and the foundation place where the restaurants are now, it just went into hyperdrive. So the building got constructed so fast, it was crazy. Then the deal got tabled with me, and obviously with the environment, the deal was, you know, super advantageous for me to have a go at it. If we're going to have a go, we may as well have a go now. So I'd had Luke.
Why did you think that, Tony? Like, why at that point? You've just come through probably the toughest period of time for your businesses and your brands. What made you roll the dice at that point, coming out of COVID, to go, got another brand, going to do it now?
We always had the idea that we were going to replicate Rice Boy, and I thought Maroochydore would be a great place to do it. Obviously, the Asian food journey started for me in Ocean Street, so it's kind of me coming home, really. I guess for me, I could see, I could just see the way people were acting with their disposable incomes. People were out, they were spending money, they were back.
They wanted to get out of the house. Is that what you
think? Yeah. Well, mate, like, I have, like, even though our seating capacity was limited, but I had never, and still have to this day, never seen so many people going out for dinner in my life. Like, it was madness. The wharf was madness. People were just out. And if we could have tripled our capacity, we could have done triple the volume of food we've ever done before. But we were still operating under the 2 square meter rule. So, but because of what happened with COVID, the opportunity regarding space and offers that were tabled were never seen before. You know, they were very lucrative deals. So, and for me to be, I don't like following other people's footsteps. You know, if somebody's doing something one way, or if I start doing something and somebody tries to copy, I want to change straight away. Look, I'm just not a follower. So I wanted to kind of lay the foundations for Maroochydore and CBD, you know, like I wanted to be the first. I don't know whether that's just ego for me, but I really wanted to be a part of laying the foundations for this new CBD to make it something truly special. And I suppose the arrogance in me kind of thought, well, everyone was saying, don't go in the new Maroochydore CBD. It's such a long play. It's going to be a wasteland for years and years and years. And I thought, you know, the wharf was pretty fucked. Like it was falling into the water when we went in there. People weren't going to the wharf and then stumbling across Rice Boy. They were going there to eat and then they were going. So I thought, are we good enough? Yeah, I think we are. So the deal was fantastic. We had the people. We really had a free swing at it. So why not? Yeah. So we're stupid enough to engage an architect, and now we've got 2 restaurants and a bottle shop in Maroochydore CBD.
What I love about listening, I want to get your 3 kind of nuggets about business success, but you've kind of dropped a few as we go along. And as you were talking then about, you know, coming out of COVID, I think it's a Chinese proverb, you know, that from chaos comes opportunity. And it sounds like for you, you've taken those opportunities and kind of zigged when others have zagged. And would you say that's true? That
it's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. There's no doubt. I mean, we did a couple straight after COVID. We did Miss May out at Sippy Downs, and I think that Sippy Downs area is just a sleeping giant. I mean, it's so thick with people. The population out there is immense. So you look at the Maccas and the Hungry Jacks out there just for cheap and cheerful offers. They just smash every single record that KFC and Maccas have done on the Sunshine Coast. And those guys don't mess around. Like they put a lot of work and energy into figuring out the demographic of people out there. Yeah. So they've done all the hard work. Like there's not a guess. You look at Harmony, Aura, all that, the university, UE, like it's thick out there. So Miss May was, it was a fantastic deal. It got tabled and opportunity with a really good childcare center right next door. So we jumped on that. And then we brought the freehold of a restaurant that I always wanted to own, which is in Palmwoods, the old Clio site, just near the railway lines across the road from the duck ponds. As a kid and apprentice, I remember driving past there. That was a super posh restaurant. And I thought, God, imagine living upstairs from your restaurant. I thought that was just the greatest thing in the world. So, and would you believe that when the freehold went under auction, nobody wanted it. They didn't want a bar of it. So we were lucky enough to grab it. And then, you know, people come out of the woodwork wanting to buy it off us. And we were like, yeah, no.
I've loved the chat. Give me 3 secrets of your success, or 3 kind of, not just as a restaurateur and someone in hospitality, but from that entrepreneurial brain of yours, Tony, 3 must-dos if you're thinking out, you know, of going down your own path with business success.
3. Look, I always think about, you've got to start with an idea. Now, when you start with an idea, you know, I can only speak of, you know, from my businesses now. When an idea is born for us, we just want to be really laser focused on that idea. And just really think about what you want to be famous for. So for us at Rice Boy, we wanted to be famous for curry and beer. So people go, why don't you do coffee? And it's like, well, we don't do coffee. We do curry and we do beer and we do a shitload of it really, really quick. And it's got great value and blah, 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 blah. When we opened Giddy Geisha, we wanted to do barbecue and yakitori and cocktails. So everything around that business was basically laser focused in on that. market bistro. We wanted table service, comfort, bistro food and wine, like that encompassing casual yet kind of formal, but a bit of old world charm. So everything's focused in and around that. So I always say, pick your mark, you know, what's your idea, and be laser focused. Don't try and be everything to everybody, because you'll never do everything to 100%. And I think where a lot of people in my game get it wrong is they try and add four or five different components to their business, and suddenly they end up doing three or four of those components to 60%. Yeah. And it all sort of comes unraveled. The other thing is, business is really, it's really brutal. And surround yourself with like-minded, fantastic people. Yeah. And then it's not as lonely, because sometimes you've got to make some really shocking and hard decisions. And, you know, if you've got a really good team around you at the top end, then it makes those tough decisions a bit easier, especially if you can bounce idea off people. So surround yourself with great people. My success, and probably the third and probably the biggest one for me, is success for me is recruitment and training. If I can't recruit and I can't train, I'm dead in the water. So my success is completely governed on my ability to successfully recruit and train.
Tony Kelly was my guest today on Everyone Has a Story. I hope you enjoyed that. Like I said at the start of the podcast, irrespective of what industry or sector you work in, I hope you got something out of that. Great to hear Tony speak and how he plans. And my favorite line out of all of that is, you know, with hospitality, restauranting, simple maths. That's all it comes down to. If you think there is somebody else that you know, family member or friend, that might benefit from hearing this podcast, this chat with Tony, please feel free to spread the podcast around and share it about on your social media networks. And if you're listening via Wooshka or Apple Podcasts, rate and review the pod. Until next time, take care.